facilities are not connected to the World Wide Web, and are in fact not even connected to our control centers. So while my control center here in the Columbia area might be able to operate a gas turbine down in Charleston from here, they do not have that luxury with the nuclear facility. So that was removed from the plans many, many years ago, decades ago.
Other questions? Thank you, Steve. Okay, I know Shelley's here. Shelley. I'm Shelley Wilson with South Carolina Department of Health and Environmental Control. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the council for your time today. It's a beautiful day, so we might should be meeting outside, but I kind of like the air conditioning too. Last week, I actually celebrated my 25-year work anniversary at DHEC. So a long time, but the reason I mention that is because 20 years ago, I looked at all of the legacy waste stockpiles that Savannah River site had and thought, oh my lord, how is this ever going to be managed? And now, today, most of it has been managed and dispositioned with the exception of high-level waste. And that is the big remaining challenge to be managed in the future. So today I'm just going to focus on the high-level waste at Savannah River site. Tank 16, Tank 12, and future risk reduction milestones. And the thing that ties all of those bullets together really is budget. And so I know I've probably mentioned this to you before, but prior to FY14, Savannah River site had a budget for liquid waste in the mid 600 millions, okay? So then the FY14 budget, actually, DOE requested over $100 million less in that budget. And so from FY13 to FY14, there was a huge drop, a drastic cut in funding for SRS liquid waste, over $100 million. And so we went from up here to down at this reduced budget level. And the problem is essentially staying in that same range moving forward. And so it's fluctuating some year by year, but it's essentially a drastically cut budget that we're moving forward into what DOE is looking at, you know, the future of flat funding for everyone. So so the drastic budget cut from FY14 that's continuing forward to today is really affecting the rate at which waste is treated. And no surprise, it's affecting DOE's ability to meet the risk reduction milestones, the tank closure dates, and other dates that stretch well into the future. The reason that this waste is so important is because there's so much of it, 36 million gallons, and because also of its form, it's a liquid, it's highly radioactive and highly toxic, and it's in tanks that are aging and degrading. Some of them have leak sites, some are in the water table. So again, it's a huge focus for the state. It's that last great Cold War legacy waste stream, and it is a high risk and a very high volume. And so we have all of these milestones into the future set at reducing that risk and closing tanks, and the budget right now is a huge factor that's jeopardizing those milestones and common to all of those bullets. Oh, I did something wrong. Okay, so for tank 16, again, we're talking about milestones that are in jeopardy. DOE originally requested a 15-month extension for that, the deadline, the closure deadline for tanks 12 and 16. And DHEC actually did grant a 27-day extension to that closure date. And the reason we did that is because our mechanism that controls that actually does give an out if the site does not get money from the federal government. And if you remember a few years ago when we had the federal government shutdown, there was a period of around 27 days when the site actually didn't receive money because of that shutdown. So we thought, well, that's fair. We'll give an extension of that equivalent time, 27 days for the shutdown, and the time it took to ramp back up for Savannah River site to get back into work. And so we allow for that 27-day extension for tanks 12 and 16. So that was not near the amount that DOE requested, so they initiated a dispute resolution process. What we actually did resolve the closure date as part of that dispute resolution process for tank 16, because the DOE looked at it and agreed to accept the 10/27/15 closure date for tank 16. So, on an ancillary note, the site is gearing up for closure of tank 16, which is great news. Again, looking at closing by that 10/27 of this year time frame. We have actually a closure module that's out for public comment period right now that talks about how that tank will be closed, and the comment period for that closure module ends today. We had a public meeting on it back in March down in the Aiken area. If you look at that website, that'll show you the public notice and let you get to the document itself. So again, that comment period closes today. And another important note is that closure is important to us, and so we put our time where our mouth is, and we actually compressed our regulatory schedule and got that down in support of DOE being able to close by October 27th. So we were very pleased to contribute in that way. So again, the good news is that tank 16. DOE is going to be able to manage the schedule, hopefully to close the tank by the DHEC date of October 27th of this year. That's great news, and we're glad to see that tank on its way to closure. For tank 12, again, the latest DHEC date is 10/27/15. We're still in the dispute resolution process for tank 12. So we started off at an informal level, then kicked it up to another dispute resolution committee, and now it's kicked up again to a senior executive committee for them to meet and discuss it, see if there's any way to get at a resolution. And the time frame for that senior executive committee is until May 11th of this year. So we're hopeful that perhaps we can reach a resolution on the tank closure date by that. So again, we've been looking at tank 16, tank 12, but there are all of these other milestones into the future that are still in jeopardy. And they've been jeopardized by the slowdown in treatment since FY14. So we're in a great position in South Carolina because we have treatment for high-level waste that other states do not have. And we've had the DWPF, the vitrification facility, for many, many years since the mid-90s. We had the ARPMC, which is the small-scale salt treatment facility, in place for many years. And, of course, the SWPF, the big treatment facility, is being constructed now. You'll hear more on that. But in a time when that facility, the SWPF, is being delayed, it seems to us that we were hoping DOE would mitigate that delay by amping up the treatment to make up for that delay. And in fact, what has happened is there's no amping up, there's a slowing down. So again, since FY14, the treatment going forward has been minimal, tied to budget. Prior to those years, if you look at DWPF, they were hitting close to 300 canisters per year. Since FY14, been down more in that 100, 125, maybe 150 range for canisters per year. Again, because the budget chokes that treatment process. So it is a huge issue for us. We're seeing all those milestones being jeopardized. The latest plan pushes the end closure date out 10 years. And so we're looking for DOE to put the money to treatment, to max out the treatment with their currently existing facilities, to add additional treatment as well to make up for the SWPF delay, and do everything that they can treatment-wise to put them in the best stead for meeting the future milestones again, so the community won't have to bear that continued risk in an untimely schedule out into the future. So that's the substance of my update today, if you have any questions.
So you talk about public comments for waste closure or tank closure. Give me a sense for how many public comments you would get.
It varies according to what facility we're talking about. But in the past, we've gotten probably from three different commenters. And in this case so far, we've gotten comments from three different commenters. So it's going to close today. We'll see how many we get. But I wouldn't say it's really popular. We're not getting a ton of comments, but like I said, three so far, and the pages I received today were like 20 pages, so a good number of comments.
I have to say, Gene Ag did not comment on this tank closure. I figure I commented on enough, I'd say the same thing again.
Mm-hmm.
Shelley, you said that you were asking, DHEC's asking DOE to max out their treatment. What, when you say that, what do you mean by that? Like, are you asking SRS? Are you asking headquarters? Are you asking Congress?
Right. That's a good question. And so we feel like we're asking Department of Energy as a whole, and a lot of that has been through our dispute resolution process. So, we're asking DOE as a whole to put something on the table that maximizes that treatment. So we have DWPF. Why not let it make 300, 400? In 1 month, it showed it could do 40 canisters per month. So that facility could possibly do 480 per year. And we're running along at 125, 150. So ARP MCU also has the capability, we believe, to run much higher than it is. When SWPF comes online, there are ways to max out the capacity there, again, given budget. So then, of course, there are other treatment processes that can be added in, such as the small column ion exchange. So it's not a pie in the sky kind of ask. These are things that are that are potentially available. It's just very much tied to money.
So let me turn to DOE, and I don't want to put you on the spot particularly.
Go ahead. Feel free.
In the past, we've asked if more money would help, and you usually said no because for like SWPF to slow down. If you got more money, could you run faster? And how persuasive can we, let's see, how persuasive an argument is the total life cycle cost of finishing up this treatment in 10 years versus 30 years?
To answer your first question, we are running, Shelley is correct in that we are running the overall liquid waste system at about a third capacity. And if the federal budget were to support are running at full capacity, yes, we would empty tanks faster, we would generate stabilized glass canisters faster, and therefore we would finish overall faster. Just a fact of life.
And where is the stumbling block? Headquarters? Congress? President, OMB, who doesn't get this?
Well, you can start with sequestration, and under the current overall funding challenges of the nation, there's a trickle down to the Department of Energy, to the President's overall budget, to the Department of Energy, and to environmental management. I would not suggest that any one entity is totally responsible for our funding level. It is as much the overall fiscal situation in this country as it is anything else.
I shouldn't ask you this because but I am, because you're managed WIP for a while. How much of this money that's gonna take to get WIP going back is gonna affect us?
We are level funded in environmental management, and so at $5.8 million, with demands that far exceed that, and so anytime one area increases, others will decrease. I can tell you that part of the strategic planning process within environmental management, we've recognized that we have to put a priority on the liquid waste program. And so internal to environmental management, we are increasing. And it may not be to the level that makes any of us happy, but we are increasing the high-level waste funding at both the Savannah Riverside and Office of River Protection, in recognition of the fact that those are our highest priorities, and therefore other areas are coming down in funding. It's a fact of level funding, and when you have other priorities like WIP and the liquid waste program, other things will come down in priority and therefore come down in funding.
And you can imagine that we're fighting pretty hard for our seat at the priority table. And for FY14, for example, I mean, I can understand that maybe environmental management has a cap under sequestration, but underneath that cap, for FY14, Hanford got a 20% increase, while we got the over $100 million increase. So there are priority decisions within that overall cap. And we want our place. We want our view. If it's a priority for DOE headquarters, then we want to see Savannah River right up there.
It's a tough problem. Thank you. Thank you, Shelley. Anything else?
First, what's the easy solution?
Okay. Time for a break. 10 minutes. We're doing great. So 2 o'clock or whatever. However your clock says 10 minutes from now. Come on back.
Is this everything you need? Just one with a signature.
Okay, if y'all could take your seats, we'll get the second half going. Okay, before I introduce our next speakers, I would just like to thank Dr. Moody, who is retiring the end of next month, for all the service you've given the nation, I guess I should say, since this isn't the only place you've been, but particularly for how far you have gotten things along here at the Savannah River site. We really appreciate it. I think your leadership has helped us get as far as we've gotten. So thank you very much. Don't be shy. And come back and see us. Thanks, and I really appreciate it, thank you. So our next two speakers are from the Salt Waste Processing Facility, Pam Marks, who is the DOE Federal Administrative Project Director, and then Tom Burns, who is the VP in the, you're a construction engineer or something.
Direct engineering in the recently appointed deputy project.
Oh, good for you. So anyway, Pam, and y'all can divide it up anytime you want, but thanks for coming.
Thank you very much. It's our pleasure to be here this afternoon. And Karen mentioned earlier she had the opportunity to tour our facility recently and highlighted the significant progress that she observed. And I will say, if you ever have an opportunity to come down and see, we have made significant progress. I can say we see a light at the end of the tunnel, and I'm pretty sure it's not a train. So we're doing very well. The project is moving along, and we're looking forward to not only completing the construction phase of the project here in the near future, but getting this facility operational and starting to process salt waste. So Tom and I are going to give you an update on the project today and where we stand on things. I think all of you know the mission of the Salt Waste Processing Facility. We are the last major cog in the liquid waste program wheel at Savannah River. As Shelley mentioned, we do have the ARPMCU facility, which is actually a pilot level process scale facility that does what salt waste will do, and we're very fortunate to have that facility. We have learned a lot technically as a result of that operation, in addition to the benefits we receive from being able to process salt waste until our facility can get running. So we're just, you know, we call ourselves the Cadillac. We're the big behemoth facility that will process our nominal nameplate capacity is about 6 to 8 million gallons a year, and I think you'll hear from Tom in a little while that there are innovations and technology applications that we plan to eventually implement that will hopefully enhance that throughput and get the liquid waste mission completed more expeditiously. So the salt waste processing facility, our job is to reduce the radioactive volume from the waste that needs to be returning those radioactive components for vitrification and DWTF. As I mentioned, we use the same technology that is being demonstrated in ARPMCU. And in the end, once we dilute the 36 million gallons of salt waste that Shelley previously mentioned, we'll process almost 100 million gallons of waste through this facility in order to close all of the tanks at the Savannah River site. This just shows you how we fit into the whole liquid waste process. The wastes are currently stored in F&H canyons, come out of the tank farms. Again, we come to salt waste. We separate the radioactive materials and send those back to DWPF for vitrification, and the non-radioactive effluents go to the Stallstone facility. Basically, you know, the simple way to think about it is the nucleides go here, the volume goes here. So that's how it works. Again, we are designing to process over 6 million gallons a year. We anticipate achieving a very significant decontamination factor. So basically, at that 40,000 level, it means all the cesium and other actinides will be removed. Our technology is very mature. One of the things that this project has been very fortunate of and has had a lot of foresight put in is technology implementation. In addition to having the ARPMCU facility, we also have a Parsons Technology Center in Aiken, where we have tested all of our major components at full scale in a cold manner. But we really, at this point, have no major technology barriers that we're concerned about. And as a result, we're also very fortunate that we have no open issues with the Defense Board, so which we're always very grateful for. So in terms of our trajectory to getting this facility operational, it's really just getting it constructed. As Steve mentioned earlier, you know, training, operator proficiency, getting all of that place is very important to us, and then getting operational. Sort of a program level, project level overview of where we are today. The project was conceived in 2002 with the approval of the mission need. Design has been completed for quite a while. We're currently heavily in the construction phase, and we're over 80% complete today on construction. Last year, the department and Parsons signed a contract modification to complete construction. It does have a cost cap component to it, under which if Parsons exceeds the cost, the negotiated cost of construction, basically they eat any overruns, and then we have share formulas in there too for cost sharing for underruns and other overruns. In that same contract mod, the commitment was made that we would complete construction by December of 2016, and I'm pleased to say that as of today, we are forecasting a May 2016 completion, so we're actually 7.5 months ahead of our target date. We subsequently received commissioning proposals from Parsons, and as a result of the negotiations for construction and receiving that proposal, we did go back to headquarters, and we got a new baseline approved, a new total project cost and schedule for the project. And in that, we committed that we have a target CD4 completion date of December of 2018. Our late date is actually out in 2021, but we are all working very hard to achieve that 2018 date. Once we get the facility operational, then under the current Parsons contract, there is 1 year of hot operations in their contract, and at that point in time, the project will be converted to a long-term operator. That's an acquisition strategy that the department has not decided on yet. And then overall, based on the capacity we're able to achieve, we expect the facility to run for about 10 to 15 years to complete all of the salt processing in the Savannah River. So with that, I will turn it over to Tom, and he'll give you some more details on where we are on the project.
Thank you, Pam. I wanted to take a moment to thank the council for having us. It's a pleasure to come talk about the project. I always enjoy doing that, and long-winded, you know, I'll try to make this to 30 minutes. I will say I did brag on Pam a bit, is that she brings an awful lot of industry experience. It's much appreciated on the Parsons side. I think we've got a very good federal contractor team, as well as integrated with Stewart and his crew from SRR. So I feel like we've got a unique benefit there in terms of a very knowledgeable federal project director, a lot of industry experience, very good cooperation on our contractor teams, good leadership at the site. Dr. Moody, you know, to move on, Jeff Craig takes over. So there's a lot to be optimistic about. I mean, as you guys know, they're a nuclear, and gals know, a nuclear project. You never know what jumps out of the curtains tomorrow to deal with. But as we go now, we've had been blessed with a lot of good fortune and good work. SWPF, Parsons is a contractor, as Pam mentioned, for design, construction, commissioning, and 1 year of operations under the current contract. The safety is as everything at the site, number one priority. We're about 83% complete with construction and 14% complete with commissioning. We've had our commissioning and operations folks, at least a vanguard on board from day one, reviewing the design products and so forth to really make sure that the end user is integrated as we go through. We're trying to look at getting things as overlapped as we can as construction moves forward to get early starts on CG&A commissioning and so forth. With certainly the biggest priority to get construction complete as fast as we can so we can meet that target date and really get into it. But where we can overlap, we're looking at doing so to really bring this in quickly. We do have a contract through all the way through CD4. We've renegotiated one on through construction, and we have now developed a provisionally approved baseline with DOE. And Pam and her team, very proud of what they did on this integrated baseline review. They brought in a lot of not just, you know, Primavera jockeys, but actual real practicing engineers and people in and operations folks to take a look. We're in the process now. They had some very good comments. I think they were generally pleased with what they saw. They indicated we could do a bit better discretizing some of the scheduling and bases of estimate to help us all in tracking our work maybe a little more closely and giving a little more risk management flavor than what we had. We're in the process of integrating the comment responses to that. Review was completed in February, and I think, to get Frank in trouble, I think we're talking about the May-June time for getting that resubmitted to Pam and her team to move forward. In a little more detail on the SWPF, Pam kind of gave you an overview of how the site tanks, many of you may be familiar, the tank farms, and then the decontamination of the salt, the classification, vitrification of the radionuclides that we pull out and that so forth. But this is the piece actually in the SWPF. And for those that are very familiar, I apologize. For those that aren't, I'll go through it. We really are doing two things. We're pulling strontium and plutonium, or strontium and actinides out of the waste stream, and then we're pulling cesium out of the waste stream. And we have two separate key flow sheet processes there. One is the alpha strike process. We put what I call pixie dust. It's monosodium titanate in. It pulls the actinides and strontium out of the waste onto a solid monosodium titanate particle, which allows you to do a separation via filtration, mechanical filtration. As you come through the filtrate, you still have the soluble cesium in there, and that's where we use the centrifugal contactors. Those are really an interesting, you know, 2200 RPM integrated machine, but at the end of the day, it's really the separation principle is oil and water don't mix. You take the cesium that's in an aqueous form, you tweak it so that it goes into the organic, and then you let oil and water separate, you pull the organic off, and then you back extract it. You don't want to deal with radioactivity in organics much, so you back extract it into an acid, send it to DWPF. That's really what happens here. That third process is just a mirror image of the first process after the cesium has been removed. Early on, when there were conservative planning estimates and motion time and motion models done, it was thought that maybe 20% of the waste might need a polishing step to be able to meet the waste acceptance criteria. Based on the good work at ARP and MCU, I think the real decontamination factors have moved that planning to where it might be none or 5% of the waste would only need to, or batches to us would need that second polishing step, if any.
Then, it, you know, obviously once the waste is then removed, the cesium, strontium, actinides are removed, it goes on to our partner's Saltstone facility, and you probably hear a bit from Stuart to talk about